everybody. It's Eddie. Glad you are with us tonight. Thought I would open up tonight with where I was last night. Matt and I were there last night, right, Matt?
We were.
We were in Vail, Colorado. Vail has a international ballet festival. And Emily, for those of you that are interested, my daughter Emily, Matt's wife, is the one on the left in the front. So she danced at Vail last night. It's a pretty big deal for her and her career. And we were at the Gerald R. Ford. Yeah, there's Emily right next to the guy. She's the one closest to the guy there. So we were in the Gerald R. Ford Amphitheater in Vail. It's pretty cool. In fact, it's kind of funny. Everybody brings all their coats, so everybody comes in and sits down, and by the time it's over, everybody's got their coat zipped up. So, not like Texas this year. Huh? All right, Mr. Mangan, you with us?
I am. Good evening, Eddie. How are you?
What's up, buddy? You were off last week working?
I was off working and then vacationing a little.
Good for you. Out in San Diego, huh?
In San Diego. Let me tell you, I'd sure hate to come back to this 100-degree climate. I enjoyed that 70-degree climate, for sure.
We go to these events, Charles. I'm not sure people know what we do. So tell them where you went and what you did.
So last week I was in San Diego last weekend and Monday and Tuesday at the CMBA, which is the California Mortgage Bankers Association. So this is where a lot of your vendors will display, you know, different vendor groups, such as preservation companies, insurance groups, all different types, lawyer networks. And so it's where servicing, it's a big servicing conference, basically. So it's where all your servicers go and meet vendors and hear different speakers. And so they're very productive because we're always out here looking for vendors. And I've got a couple of leads that we're going to be introducing to the Note School group here next several weeks. So it was a very good conference and a great turnout.
Very good. Yeah, people don't realize that we spend a lot of money, every year going to conferences, mortgage bankers, distressed debt, IMN, Five Star, all these conferences that we go to, and they have most of them have series of conferences, and we go to them for the purpose of trying to help find assets or servicers or vendors that help us with different things. So you were in California last week, and Bob and I were in South Carolina last week, both doing the same thing.
Correct.
Yep.
We actually met with Peak also, Peak Loan Servicing. So many of you have loans servicing or serviced by Peak, and we actually went to their office and did a tour. We just boarded a couple of groups of loans with Peak here in the last few weeks. So we will be selling a lot of the loans we have boarded with Peak will be selling off to our students. The great thing about that is that if you don't want, you don't have to service transfer. You can leave that loan with Peak, and you don't have to go through as much of the servicing transfer headache as a lot of times we go through. So that's the advantage of using Peak. And we've got a couple other servicers. I know, Eddie, you and Bob went to visit one. Mm-hmm. And so we may eventually have more loans with that servicer as well. So we're going to be adding some servicers to our network, and these will be servicers that can also service for our students. So that's the good thing about that.
Yeah, we've got some really big announcements coming up with some servicing and asset management and stuff, and we'll be progressing with that. In fact, not this weekend, but next weekend we have our Titanium Mastermind, and we're gonna give them some information to kind of start testing one of these groups. And basically, Charles, here's the cool thing. You can buy a non-performing note get it foreclosed, they'll take the asset and do whatever you want to with it.
Wow, that is good.
And they've done 20,000 of them. This ain't their first rodeo.
They have a clue what they're doing here.
That so it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So we're excited about it. All right, Mr. Bat. Tell me something good. What we got?
Well, we've got Michael on here first. He's got a question about some. Well, I'll just let him go into it. So I'm gonna. Michael, you're unmuted. If you want to go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'm focused on developing networks with investors. I get that notes is an alternative investment program which is suitable for the times, especially in this environment of low interest rate. It's the matter of finding them and making presentations to them. So that's what I've been thinking about. That's what I've been focused on. So I'm looking at ways to do that. And one of the things I was doing was looking at that realtor presentation slide 1.2, which is in the resources area. And it was talking about, that slide was created in 2009. It was talking about how that owner financing has went into decline in the 2000s. And then since the 2008 debacle has been steadily rising. So I was just curious, has that trend continued? Do we have data from 2010 to 2015 tracking that to update those slides?
Well, the point is, Michael, I can get it. It's just not worth going and chasing.
Okay.
And the reason I would say that is there was an era where mortgage lending was essentially shut down. Right?
Right.
And we've never had really good luck with realtors in the past. And there was an era where we did that and we chased realtors to go offer them a service to create notes and then secure an option to buy the note. Okay?
Right.
And we deliberate about what some of this stuff that we've done. I mean, we put a lot of time and energy in that and we deliberate, should we just take that down? Or is it meaningful? So it is meaningful, but it's not. It's like if I were prioritizing the things that I would go chase, this would be way down the list, like next to going to sit in the sun in Texas for the afternoon, right?
When it's not raining.
yeah, it's not raining. Now, I was driving home today. My thermometer in my Suburban said it was 108.
So yeah, we got you beat in Las Vegas. I'm getting 116 here.
Yeah. Well, so here's what I would say. I would not chase realtors. Has there been a pile of owner finance notes created that's buyable and viable? The answer is yes. But you're going to go chase the consumer directly, Michael, meaning that you're going to go deal directly with the guy that has created these notes.
Okay, I guess maybe I should rephrase my question. I get there's a whole bunch of guys that have created the notes, and that's probably not my target market. My target market is probably the unsophisticated investor who's taken the easy road out and has traditionally put his money in mutual funds and bonds and CDs, and there's an alternative to that, and that's okay. Notes, and he doesn't know about it. And it's my job to tell them about it.
I totally get that. So here's what I'm going to say to you. When you threw me off my target a little bit when you said I'm going to go chase realtors.
Yeah, what I'm really not – I'm not interested in the realtors. I'm just saying a lot of realtors – there are a few realtors are specialized in working with cash buyer investors. Yeah. And I just want to get their database of investors.
Yeah, they're not going to give them to you. You can, the odds of that are virtually zero.
Well, I was hoping there was some sort of an incentive for them, and more importantly, a better source for me is the accountants.
All right.
The accountants have that database. They have those clients.
All right. It's a great topic. This is a great topic. Okay?
Okay.
What you're talking about is what we refer to as a stock market refugee, right?
Okay.
Anxious money. They're anxious to do something else with their money other than put it in the stock market.
Exactly.
Okay. The guy that has control of that guy is not going to give him to you.
There's okay. no incentive I could give them.
You don't need them.
Okay.
You got every cash buyer and every cash lender in 2,000 counties. Why do you need a realtor? You don't need them. I've been doing this for 35 years. I've raised a lot of money. Realtors that have brought me an investor, almost zero. So I like the vein you're going in. You're not thinking wrong. I'm just going to dial in on where you're going and how we're going to get there. Okay?
Mm-hmm. How do you get to this site that's on the screen right now? I've never seen this site.
I'll put it up. Give me a second.
Maybe that's what I really need to look for is, like you said, go after the cash buyers. And I guess what you're saying, we already have that database. I guess I don't know how to find that database. I didn't know where it was.
All right. So Michael, let me tell you some things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been through some liaison calls with Zarina?
Yes.
Okay. And so now you can understand why we do a little bit of that. And then those calls are really designed to funnel you back to the webinars. Okay?
Okay.
And we totally get it. If it's invisible to you, no matter how much money and time and energy we spent building it, it's invisible. Okay? So, Matt, where did you go to get there? Where did you go to get to the cash buyers, cash lenders list?
So I went to helpful websites and our get up there. So if you go to the resource tab in your members, mm-hmm. part, go down to helpful websites, just click on that. Mm-hmm. It'll cycle through. Go down to capital sources. You've got BTR in there as well as CFG loan advisors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm trying to get him to the cash buyers, cash lenders list, Matt.
Matt, you just had that up. You just posted that a moment ago.
Yeah, and give me just a second.
All right, so while we're digging around trying to find the site, Michael, let's talk about what we're trying to accomplish.
Yes.
Okay? I'm looking for people that have a proven pattern of funding business, and now I know they're struggling with inventory. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the magic. Why don't I want you to call on a realtor? Without training, what do you think a realtor is really going to understand what you do?
No.
I don't either. Okay. I train a lot of realtors. There's a lot of realtors on this call tonight.
I'm a realtor.
Yeah. Let me see that. So some are really active. Some are really active. Some are not so active.
Right.
Okay. But the bottom line is, you go give a realtor a cash buyer, what do they think they want out of the deal?
What does the realtor want out of the deal?
If the realtor gives you somebody that has a bunch of cash and wants to buy, what does he want out of it?
Referral fee.
And how much?
20% of the commission.
ain't no way. I can dig through the realtor's data that's more sophisticated than what 99 and 9/10 of them have, and I can get deal directly with the source. All right, so Matt, there is your cash buyers list.
Correct, and it is under that tab that I just went into, so if you'll give me a second, I'll pull that back up. But that is the tab that will take you to the cash buyer. You just have to log in on that next tab.
Okay.
It takes you to the King Cobra. So give me just a second.
By the way, this list, it just says select up the five counties. Can you do all the counties? All the states?
Well, there's some limitation to how much you can pull, but it's got more data than you could ever. You could give yourself brain damage go finding all the data that's out there on it.
All right.
So don't try to go, you know, tackle the whole mountain, just find you a nice big boulder.
Okay.
So, Matt, go to...
going to the main listings. What do you want me to go to?
Yeah, just go to Nevada.
On that. All right. Well, Carson, which county?
Clark County.
Clark. Yeah, don't you ever watch Pawn Stars?
I have
the guy's the curator for the Clark County. You know, he's all, yeah. That's the only reason I know that, by the way. All right, so sales range. Let's just start with January 1st of this year. Now, you remember that cash buyers are way off, right? Way off. So I may have to dig back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So Matt, let's go to owner profile. Owner lives outside of property state. Click yes. All right, now just pop that up and see what comes up.
Hopefully they didn't get me one that's going to.
Why do you think we did it that way, Michael?
Well, because if they buy from out of state, they have a tolerance for being creative and more open-minded. And they're not locked down to just buying in their hometown.
Yeah, that's correct.
Still got it working here.
Oh, it's gonna be a big list.
And just to show, there's a tutorial on that. If you go to the train and then go to your mini lessons.
Yeah.
Then once you go to your mini lessons, you can just scroll down and then there's a tutorial on kind of how to go through it and how to get the best, because there's other things in here too you can use. So which one?
You got a lot of tutorials on there. Which one specifically?
One that says the Kent Clothier software demo.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be the second tier right there.
Yep. All right. See it.
All right. So the point, Michael, is this. I don't want to go, like, get too drilled down tonight. So you find these guys. You got cash buyers. You got cash lenders. Right?
Right.
One of the things that I might do with cash buyers is start with a local market. So I might start with people that live in Las Vegas. You can drill this list down to the zip code. Okay? The zip code of the buyer and the zip code of the property. All right, Matt. George, what you got there, bud?
Running a little slow here. It came up, so.
Okay.
So still working there. It just teased us a little bit.
So, you know, all I'm saying to you is these are people with a proven level of capital to play in our business. Now it's my job to figure out how to go position them in the market where they can go do it.
Right.
I want to ask you a question. If I ask the average realtor in Las Vegas, if they could find every cash buyer that bought a property in Clark County, do you think they would know how to go find it?
No.
You kind of get my point?
Yep.
It's like you're playing at a different level. You got databases. You got a drill down harvesting technique that, in all fairness, most realtors don't have. I mean, it's not that they couldn't figure it out. They just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do we have it, but we're going to this is what we're trying to do on this call is really talk about what that looks like. So the point is you can go down through there and find people that buy assets. You know, you can create a mailing list. There's numerous ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the biggest thing I'm going to say to you is all of this is a name. It's not a checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go get them to give you their checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
Are you right? Are there people desperately struggling to go invest their money today? And is there a lot of dry cash? And oh, 100%. Nothing else to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what I was looking for. This looks like the magic holy grail that I was looking for.
All right. So let me give you a little riddle real quick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All I did was show you the front gate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As you progress, you're going to try to take somebody down the yellow brick road. Right now, all I did is point over there and say, look, right over there, you know, a mile away, there's the front gate. So the process of your coming back to us and us talking about how to deal with this guy, that's going to be a process.
Right.
Okay? But I feel really, really strongly about this. I would tell you that this is definitely something that we do within our own family. My wife does this all the time, and we feel very strongly about it. Cash buyers and cash lenders. If they're a cash lender, what's their problem today?
Cash lender. What's the problem with cash lender? I don't know.
What's the problem with a hard money lender today? How does hard money lending work?
Finding borrowers that just cannot get a conventional loan, but they're solid borrowers.
They're not consumers, right? They're investors.
Right.
And then they want to make a loan at what kind of a loan-to-value ratio?
70%.
Okay. So they're trying to find a guy that's buying houses for 70 cents on the dollar.
Oh, okay. That's not happening.
How's that work for you?
No, not working.
You get my point?
Yep.
I can use this database to find people, and I know what their pain is before I get there.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Well, the list that you have on the REO list, those are all 70 cents on the dollar or less. I don't know what the rehab costs are, but those prices look
off. I know, when we release those assets, they ought to be sold in about 6 seconds. But I've spoiled everybody, Michael. If we sell them assets at 65, 70 cents, they're like, well, can't we get them at 55? I know what the market is. And when we put those assets out, the students really should jump on them. And I don't mean that some don't. I just mean it kind of surprises me they don't sell out in 5 minutes sometimes.
Well, I've been looking at them. I'm sure attracted by it.
All right, sounds great. Okay, Steve here. Steve has a question. Matt, can you find him? Thanks, Michael.
I have. So I'm going to – actually, they're under Carol, so.
Okay.
You're unmuted. You're unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. You're a little echoey there. You need your speaker.
I'm going to try.
By the way, just to tell you guys this, I know echoing drives you nuts. All I use at home are these. So I just use it. I just plug into my laptop a little set of iPhone earbuds, and then I have a microphone. And then also you can buy a little exterior microphone that's less than $30 or $40, and all of that echo that you guys can struggle with, it'll go away. And when we have the same problem internally, Charles will tell you that. So we're always working and trying to figure it out ourselves.
See if that's on the phone as well. So I'm trying to talk on the phone. So just shut the phone off.
Yeah.
And so if you could unmute the phone, and I'll mute the computer.
All right, cool. All right, Steve, you with us now?
Hold on a second. Is it under Steve? What's the last name? Steve Camp?
Find him, Matt.
I've got a Steve Camp.
Wrong Steve.
Okay.
Yeah, wrong Steve.
All right. I only have one Steve up here, so I don't know if it's under a different name or.
All right, well, let's do this. Steve, just kind of hold your hand up so Matt can find you, and we'll figure it out, and we'll move on. We'll come back and catch you in a minute.
Okay. I'm going to see if Emmanuel it was the one I had. Let's try it again. Is it still pretty bad on the echo?
I have a feeling it's going to be bad because I have to go through a computer. We're watching you on TV, actually, so. So it's not going to work well. I'll just state the question and I'll take you offline.
Okay.
For the $100 deals, is the $100 deal something that is still an active way of trying to sell? If we buy a performing note, is it still a viable option for us to get someone to pay us almost what we paid for it and then have them take the first few years worth of payments on it? Is that still an option for that? I've heard some possibilities that because there's two people on that particular note, there might be an issue with the SEC, but I don't know that. If you could answer that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. All right. First of all, let me just tell you something. I'm going to beg you on this one to talk to me about this subject and don't talk to somebody that really doesn't have experience. We've done almost 20,000 partials. I got experience. Okay? I'm not an attorney. I make that abundantly clear. I don't play one on TV. But I can tell you that my wife has sold more partials this year to investors on the $100 model than we've ever done in our entire career. So do not ever, ever, ever let somebody tell you a bunch of bullshit that you can't do this. Because I'm telling you, what we're teaching you to do, the Speed family's doing. Okay? When you buy a partial, you take an assignment of that note. When you sell a partial, you assign the entire note. You don't assign part of the note, you assign the entire note. That's what makes it not a fractional. There is a buy-sell agreement specifically for a partial, and that agreement specifies that after they receive the entitlement based on what they bought, number of payments, amortization schedule, all that stuff, that loan is reassigned. Now, I'm not telling you not to go hire an attorney. I'm not telling you to go get advice in the marketplace. But I'm telling you right now that unless you're dealing with somebody that has very, very specific knowledge about this business, I've not heard them have a deep level of knowledge. I can tell you that the attorney that helps Note School students more than anybody is Jeff Watson. I'll promise you he sells partials. We do it. We've done it tens of thousands of times for over 30 years, and I'm just saying we do it. So is it a viable model? Yes. Is there a legal process and a way to structure it that can work? Yes. So very good question. Certainly something that if somebody has not done it, it needs to be experienced. I caution you about talking to people that don't have experience in this business. Okay? Just because a guy's got his shingle hung outside his office and says he's an attorney doesn't mean he's an attorney with specific knowledge about our space. I'm not able to render legal advice, but I feel very confident in telling you I think we can help you get in the right direction to make sure that you're progressing with this. Okay? All right, Mr. Matt, what you got, brother?
All right. I'm going to see if Emmanuel has a mic as well, because they had a question also. So I'm going to – Emmanuel, are you good to go, or do you have a mic?
Yes, I do. I do.
Okay.
What's up, Emmanuel?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you doing, Eddie?
Good.
Good. My question, I'm sure, is probably somewhere in the repository, but I was wondering, all the assets that you guys have in Note School or VIP assets, are they visible to a seasoned investor? Meaning, could I, you know, promote this REO property that I want to flip to an investor and not fear that they're going to be able to steal a deal from under me because I gave them an address and, you know, better details?
There are different levels of access, and we do sell assets to other investors. We don't sell at the same price. We don't sell it at the same time. And we give mentor students a swing at assets before we give assets to anybody else. VIP Exchange has different levels. Those aren't necessarily all assets that we own. And they sometimes will give us an exclusive on assets, but at some point they theoretically could be available to the public. If you're looking at an REO property, you can do that. If you're looking at a note, we are not authorizing somebody to go out there and take a portfolio of notes and just put it out in the marketplace. If you have a vetted investor that you have verified has funds and is ready to buy on a case-by-case basis, we will allow you to work with them. Okay? What we do not want, to the degree that we will cut a student off from buying assets from us, what we do not want is we do not want these assets on the internet.
Gotcha. And that's why I wanted to make sure the difference in the different categories. Note School, I kind of see that one, but the other one, like the VIP REO, can I simply give this address and information to a potential cash buyer and make that transaction without them, you know, me losing the deal per se?
Okay, well, how are you going to secure they're going to pay you?
Gotcha. And I guess that's the biggest part I got to figure out, you know, from doing more studying with you guys, is how to secure that process. I'm assuming doing a contract, tying up the property of some sort. I'm not sure.
I do not recommend going under contract with a property and you don't have the money to buy it. VIP will cut you with a sharp knife on that one, baby.
Understood.
We see this way too often. We've seen it a couple of times in the last week. We've seen a student that says, hey, I want to buy an asset, and they type an asset from us, and then all of a sudden they come back and they're like, well, we don't really know. We thought about it, or we really didn't have the money. We were just kind of kidding. And I must tell you, our industry is really tough on this. And I'm certainly not picking on anybody, but I'm telling you, if you type an asset and you can't close, that makes you subject to not being available to the next level of inventory. That is the way our industry works. If Bob Repass or myself do that, or Charles does it, we'll tell you. An investor will cut us off like a you know, running a butter knife through hot butter. Quick. If we come back and go, well, we really just kidding, we really didn't have the money. We thought an investor had the money, but then all of a sudden we found out later he really didn't have the money. So we, you know, part of our job is to teach you guys how to operate within an industry standard. Can you position yourself with an investor to go do this? Yes, but you got to have a, you got to go develop a mature relationship with them. We do it all the time. But I'm not out there sending it to some investor that I think's not ready to buy, or I haven't verified their funds or whatever. And that's where it all gets into. And Charles, you know that this is something that takes up probably too much of your time and the executive's team time dealing with, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you need to have that investor lined up when you plan on doing this. Because you know, we have to trade these assets, and you know, it just takes up too much time, and we don't have the time to let it just drag on.
When a student signs a letter of intent with us and says they're going to buy an asset, we're not really a great sport when they come back and tell us that they don't want to buy it.
Got it.
And that's just, and that, so once again, that's an industry standard.
And that affects the other inventory to our students as well. When you tie up an asset, we pull it out, you know, and then you come back a week later and say, no, I don't want them. Well, those are assets that some of our other students could have been looking at. And so, you know, we want to be fair across the board, but we just can't tie an asset until you make a decision.
Yeah. The question, Mike wrote a question in the question box, and he said, so, Charles, if I say I want to buy an asset, is there still a time period for verification of due diligence?
When we post the assets, it'll have due diligence links there, which are going to be BPOs, title. If you want to order an inspection or another BPO, you know, I advise you to do so. But do not tie up the asset until you have all your due diligence completed. We'll give you time to do the due diligence.
No, let me restate that, okay? Some things we don't have absolute. Okay, if we have a performing note, we may not necessarily have the pay history on that note subject to somebody saying, I want to buy it. We presume they're going to have the right to review the pay history. Okay, we're telling them it's paying. They have the right to see that it's paying. Here's what we don't want. We don't want somebody tying up an asset and then come back and go, you know, I Google Earthed it, or I ran a crime stat, and I just don't know. You see what I'm saying? That's when they did not do a sufficient level of due diligence before they tied it up. We're quickly telling you that if you're buying an asset from us, we believe in all our heart you have good title. And if we're telling you it's a pay and loan, we're telling you that there's a pay history that supports the fact that it is a pay and loan. Is that something that we try to provide up front? The reason we don't, to be honest with you, is just too much labor. To go pull a current pay history every day on every asset and go post that to the list, it's just too much brain damage. So we usually don't give you a pay history on paying loans until after somebody's committed to buy them. We'll tell you the date last paid, and we're saying the loan's paying. So, Mike, yes. There is some degree. We have had, in the last couple of weeks, we've had students that have committed to buy assets and go, oh, well, I didn't want to buy. Change my mind. A bunny rabbit ran across the road, and I decided to go chase that bunny rabbit. Okay? That ain't cool with us. So if somebody ties up an asset and we take it off the market, yes, we expect them to buy it so long as there's something in their final due diligence that is nothing that is alarming that they otherwise wouldn't have known. And that's the same way that we did. We tie up assets from groups, and we set our expectations very clearly as to what that bid is subject to, and then we complete the due diligence. So yes, theoretically, Charles is right. You could order a property inspection. You go out there and you're like, did you know that a tree just fell through the yard last night? See what I'm saying? Okay, well, in that case, we didn't know that. Or, you know, something, you know, the guy just filed bankruptcy yesterday. Okay, well, at the time we put the asset up, we didn't know that. We'll commit to you that we'll tell you whatever we know. So I hope that kind of clarifies it. And it is an issue that, you know, because we're selling you assets, we're not just note school, but we're also selling you assets, we have to kind of say, hey, guys, there's a set of ground rules. Just because you're a note school student does not absolutely entitle you to buy assets from us forevermore. You gotta work with us. You know, we're not gonna try to sell you an asset and hide anything from you or make you make a buy you shouldn't make. But when you sign that letter of intent, you really are saying, subject to final due diligence, I'm gonna buy it. And I know, Charles, you deal with that all the time, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So we try to be nice, but sometimes we're tough. If we've not been tough with you, if that's happened and we've not been tough with you yet, we might be tough. Eddie's capable of being tough on that, isn't he, Charles?
Just a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
All right, let's see. Roman, can you drill down on in developing the investor? I get a lot of investors claiming they want to get in the note buying, but their same approach is take evaluating property.
You want me to unmute Roman, or do you think you have this question?
No, we'll talk to Roman about this.
Roman, go ahead.
Roman, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man.
How you doing?
I'm good. Hold on, I was putting on my headset up. Sorry, I didn't know you were going to me right away. Can you hear me okay?
We can. So Roman, I think the issue is, you know, I think the first definition that anybody has to make is, are you dealing with passive investors or active investors? And let me define an active investor, somebody that's actively buying notes right now. And we get, as you could imagine, Roman, we get people that call us all the time that are outside of note school and like, hey, yeah, man, I'm a note guy and I buy notes and just wondering if you got some inventory you could show us. So we start asking them a bunch of hard questions. Basically, Roman, we set them up. Where are you servicing your loans right now? How many assets do you own? Who you been buying assets from? You see what I'm saying? If that's true, I mean, if you ask us that, Roman, could we answer all those questions?
In a heartbeat.
Makes you real, right?
Yep.
So understand that people will have you send them assets that don't have the money, that have no experience in really doing the business. I mean, why would it be secretive to tell you who services your loans? Why would that be a secret? It's like saying, I'm not going to tell you what kind of car I drive, because that's a, you know, Chevrolets are a secret. So one of the things that, you know, our antennas really jump up when somebody says they're in the space and they're doing it. Some of the stuff they may not tell us. Well, I'm not going to tell you who I've been buying assets from. Okay, well, maybe our relationship, I define relationships, Roman, as like it starts out with a 1 and ends up with probably about a 6. Okay, in my whole life, I've had less than this many people on my hand I can say I had a 10 relationship with. Okay? So I don't think everybody that I ever sell assets to, I'm going to have a 10 relationship with. I'm probably going to have a 5 or 6, though. But all of those relationships kind of start out with a one, and they go up. And, you know, what we try to do is ask it in a casual way. You know, and just you're just asking in a conversational way. So Roman, who services your loans? And in your case, Roman, what would you say?
FCI.
You use FCI.
Mm-hmm.
Could you use Madison Management, or could you use Peak or Allied?
Sure.
Okay. So, and Roman, how many loans do you have with them?
Right now, just the one.
At the moment, I've only got one asset with them. I've had other assets that I bought as a non-performer, and they rolled through the system, and now I got them as I got possession of the property. Right.
Correct. Correct.
All true.
Correct.
So, Roman, what's your sweet spot? What do you like to buy?
Well, when I first joined the mentorship, and it seems that it kind of runs heavy, that non-performing is the first magnet people go to because they think they'll get the property.
Right.
And my experience has been, you're looking for a diamond in the sand. You're going through a lot of non-performing background check, you know, background notes to review them and look for that one that is positioned where, yeah, this is a good deal. Whereas the more I've learned over the last couple of years, performing notes are a lot better vehicle to build wealth capital. They're performing.
Well, now, Roman, can I tell you this? If you buy an asset that we bought, we ran every one of those assets through due diligence. And you can do due diligence on 10 out of 10 of them, and there's going to be something that makes absolute sense about buying that asset, or we wouldn't have pulled the trigger and bought it. I'm not saying that's true for everybody you've looked at inventory from, but I am saying that's true with us. Now, I'm saying some people like chocolate and some people like sherbet. Okay? Not everybody likes the same deal, but I'm just going to say that we're not buying assets that we were scared to own. Okay, and I agree with you, Roman, that that non-performing notes is always sexy when people start, and then they discover that being the bank's not such a bad plan. If you're gonna buy performing notes and be the bank, you either got to have a lot of money, or you're gonna have to develop down the road a leveraging technique. You're gonna have to use somebody else's money to either buy your cost in that note back, owning the back end of the note or making a profit up front, or you know, you're going to have to be able to form some kind of entity with them or different ways like that. So I'm not poo-pooing performing notes. I'm just saying I wouldn't say necessarily that buying non-performing notes is a diamond in the sand. What I would say to you is finding notes from certain sources or a diamond in the sand. Because I promise you, every note we buy, we're willing to keep. We're not going to buy it if we're not willing to keep it. Does that make sense to you?
Well, let me ask you then. I mean, when you're buying a portfolio of 1,000 notes, well, let's just use a realistic number, 100 notes. Because I've seen small portfolios come across my email, and when I look at them and I drill down into them, and we're talking small portfolios, we're talking 10, 15 properties, there's always a couple stinkers in there. And the conversations I have had with some note buyers who bought small portfolios. One comes to mind about some group of investors I know in Michigan bought a four property portfolio for a certain amount of money, and when it finally got down to it, two of them were stinkers. Third one they broke even, fourth one they made some money. Whole experience that they had now, and they're not mentor students. I will say
Roman,
that
Roman, dude, really? Don't compare us to somebody else.
But going back to what Michael...
If we bought it, Roman, willing to own it.
Okay, but going back to what Michael was referring to at the top of the hour as far as developing this investor database and developing those relationships, you know, those are the people you start with. You have conversations with people who aren't mentor students, who do have a couple of shekels to rub together, who think of it as an investment, and, you know, they share with you their experience.
Well, listen, I'm just going to tell you something. If you're trying to go find a bunch of people that have bought notes and had no training and bought a bunch of bullshit notes from people they shouldn't have bought notes from, as my dad would have said, Roman, that's a tough row to hoe. You see what I'm saying?
No argument.
I mean,
they're
scorned because they've been screwed by somebody. I'm just saying to you that you can't compare a vetted inventory that we've gone through an incredible due diligence process and took our capital and funded those assets to somebody that's got a bunch of assets on the internet. Listen, let's just say there's companies on the internet right now that claim they're capital funds and they're putting out assets, and if you buy from them, you wire the money to them, and they don't no more own those assets than I own my neighbor's house next door. And so I'm just saying, this is what we're trying to help you guys do, is not get a bad experience. The guy you're trying to get money from, Roman, is just, he's a frustrated landlord, or he can't find any inventory.
Yeah, you're right.
That's exactly what you're looking for. Don't go find some guy that bought a bunch of inventory from somebody that was selling a bunch of crap in Michigan, and they got butchered and probably didn't know what they were doing anyway. Hey, that's gonna be a tough way to go raise capital. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I'm just sharing with what's come across my plate last 6 months.
But you gotta understand, Roman, when you kinda say that you kinda poo pooing by non performing notes, then you make me kinda respond to that. There's nothing wrong with buying non performing notes.
Oh, I didn't mean to
make it
sound like that. I got
people
that have
crushed out
of
the park buying non-performing notes. Yeah. So I get it, and I will say to you that Charles and I strongly believe that who you source notes from is a direct relationship to what your experience is going to be. Now, am I telling a student not to do due diligence just because they buy from us? Absolutely not. I don't think anybody thinks that. Hopefully they don't. Now, let's go back to your original question, Roman. You're wanting to buy performing notes. You're wanting to use other people's money essentially to operate your own little bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying you start out with me as a mega seasoned REO agent, and you've now morphed into wanting to buy performing notes. Because in your moment and where you're at in your life, you don't want to go do the asset management piece. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you figured out you buy these notes and they pay every month and it's good. You've got to create a nest of people that you're nurturing. Take your iPhone or your calendar out and circle it. What's today?
10th.
Today is August the 10th. That's what my iPhone says. If I start chasing an investor today, when is he going to write me a check?
I don't know.
Got my iPhone right here, okay?
Okay.
Here's my iPhone. I'm going to roll forward 1, 2, 3, 4 months. He's going to write me a check on November the 10th. That's the day after Node Expo ends. And if I don't understand that, I'm going to be frustrated for the rest of my life. Now, what I'm saying to you is my wife could buy 100 notes between now and the end of the year, and she's got investors that will buy partials from her for all 100 notes. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of them are students, because I figured out at the end of the day that they want to fund a lower amount of money, and they don't, you know, they like the fact that she owns the back end of the note. In fact, Roman, what's really funny about partials is the number one motivator in an investor buying a partial from you is that you own the back end of the note. Why is that comforting to them?
You got skin in the game.
You got skin in the game, baby. You're owed money that you're not going to get until they get all their money. Okay, so what's this look like? You got an investor that's going to fund some business. What does it look like? Do you sell him a partial? Do you form an LLC and you and him are members and you're the managing member? Do you form an entity and he makes a loan against the note secured by the property, which is the note? Can you do all of that?
Mm-hmm.
The investor is not ready to answer those questions in the first week or two you talk to them. They just need to get comfortable with it. Roman, you've sold more than 1,000 REOs, right?
More like 3,000.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you can relate to the fact you're just trying to warm this guy up. You're trying to make him feel comfortable. You're not trying to cheat him, right? There's no trickery involved. You're just trying to get him at his point where he's comfortable. And so, you know, servicing is a big deal, having a loan third party serviced, you know, them kind of feeling like, hey, if the loan goes bad, Roman's not going to get hit any of his money until I get my money. So, you know, you can't necessarily guarantee them they're going to get all their money, but you can guarantee them that you don't get any of the back end payments until they get all their money. Because that's where the agreement reads. All right, so I just want to make sure before we kind of disconnect on this that I'm kind of addressing really what you need me to here.
Yes.
And guys, for those of you that are newer, or those of you that have never been a real estate broker and sold 3,000 bank foreclosed properties, Roman, I think, will be the first to tell you. Learning this stuff's a process, isn't it, Roman?
Oh, man, it's just been an education.
And, you know, and so this is what this call is about. You know, performing notes and dealing with investors and the flow of it and all the process of it, it's huge. I have a lot to say about dealing with investors. I have a lot to say about dealing with people that own notes. Okay? Both of which are a form of negotiation. Okay? What I encourage any one of you to do is to bring me specific examples together, and we'll beat up how to talk about it. So this call clearly tonight has been slanted predominantly, if not 100%, with dealing with investors. Roman, when does somebody give you their money?
Once the terms have been agreed to.
And they're comfortable that you're not going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. And there is a great value in what we beat up on these calls, because it's really a matter of, I try to play back to you things as to how the industry works, so that when you're speaking to an investor that you're saying, hey, these are industry standards. This is how the deal works. Charles, I've not meant to shut you out tonight, brother. I'm sorry to keep you up and not let you have fun with us.
You are good. I'm just listening, Eddie. You're good.
Well, you've spent your whole career either depending on somebody to write a check and fund an asset that you had in some form of loss mitigation, or you sat on the fence of, you worked for a builder and you guys created 60 to 100 brand new owner finance notes a month, didn't you, on brand new houses?
Every month, yeah.
And you did that for a long time.
5 years. Yeah, we generated close to 100 loans a month.
So, Charles, don't you agree that it's just, this is, people say, how do I find the money? And it's just, you got to have the market and the business in your skin enough that you just can comfortably explain it to them. It's not a matter of slick talking, is it?
No. No, you just got to be confident in what you're doing.
Yeah.
This has actually been a great topic tonight to talk about.
Well, I think it's where the rubber meets the road with a lot of students.
Yeah. I see.
You know. So, Roman, my response to you is the first thing you have to do is to start out. Go put the dartboard up. That's one of the things that I see students struggling with more than I wish they would. Just go put the dartboard up. People are always like, Eddie, the weight of the dart and the, and they're trying to be like, you know, trying to figure out how to go to the Olympics throwing darts. And I'm like, hey, do you have a dartboard? So in our analogy, what is the dartboard? It's the investor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Roman, go find investors that have been cash lenders and cash buyers within the state of Ohio. You live in Ohio. Most people, you live in the honey hole where the inventory's at.
That's what I've been told.
You know what? I tell people this all the time, and you've been around us enough to know this. Wouldn't you, I'm not saying you want to move because this is where your home is, and we get that. But wouldn't you kind of rather live in California?
No,
I mean, because that's where the money's at, right?
Yeah.
Do you need to live near the collateral?
No.
So it doesn't matter where you live. If you're Roman and God love you, if you want to move to Cleveland, Roman will help you find a house. he knows that. Roman's my buddy. He knows I'm jacking with him. But so if you don't know Eddie and Roman and stuff, we're just kidding. It's just all in fun. But yeah, this is the first thing is go get you a dartboard. Go find you a group of investors that you can start a conversation with. Now, what I want you guys to do is then bring back specifics. Okay. And people say, well, what do I say to an investor? Take these presentations that we've done where it just explains the note business and how it works. Here's why notes are good. Here's why owning a note is easier than owning a rent house. Okay? All of those presentations are available to you. They're on the membership site. And if you're like, well, Eddie, I sure wish you'd do 10 minutes of that. Well, then come on the membership, come on the Monday night call and say, Eddie, would you do that for us again? Sure, I will. Matt will tell you I'll do that, won't he, Matt?
Absolutely.
Matt will tell you that I changed everything that we were going to cover tonight.
You did.
Didn't I, Matt?
You absolutely did.
Just because, you know, this is where the audience wanted to go, and we'll do it. We're cool with that. These are great questions. Yeah, Lisa Hankerson's got a great offer for you, Roman. She's got a little fixture-upper for $500,000.
I got a fixture-upper for her for three.
For $3,000 or $300?
$3,000.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'd sort of like to be a fly on the wall to hear that conversation anyway, but...
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is this helpful to you guys, Matt? Are we wrapped up on what we were going to cover? This is fun stuff tonight. Charles, I'm sorry. Usually you're my go-to guy for all the details, and it's all been big picture tonight. But it's all good, huh?
No, great content and good stuff to cover, Eddie. No doubt.
See, y'all let me have a little time off. Anything else, Matt?
I don't know if you've seen the boards. There's a couple of questions still there. I don't know if we want to move them to maybe ask, see if Joe can answer them on Thursday or.
All right. Well, ping me here, bud.
Ralph has a question. That might be a question that actually Charles can get involved with, as far as the due diligence on third party offerings that come through our website or through our member site.
Uh huh.
So Ralph is just kind of wanting to know, what is the level of, do we do due diligence on the third-party offerings that come through, or is that something that we're just offering? How does that due diligence work on that?
So these are relationships. Our third-party offerings, these are generally relationships that we have with various companies. We've bought assets from these companies ourselves. We always do our own due diligence when we buy from these companies. The information provided by these companies is, I mean, these PPOs, title, that's provided by them, not by Colonial. So we have not looked at those. Now then, we put up an offering, third-party offering, about 3 weeks ago. It's still on the member site from one of our third parties. And there was 36 assets of performing loans, and to date we've only sold about 13. There's still some good assets in there. I'm getting emails. Bob gets emails every day. I know I
get emails. These are all performing notes, right?
These are all performing notes.
And there's some, like, we've looked through there, and in our interpretation, there's some diamonds in there.
Yeah, yeah, so, there is.
So we're trying to figure out why on God's green earth, we've had this asset out for 3 weeks, why all those 36 assets haven't traded. Exactly. And I'm fussing at you guys a little bit. Because I can tell you something, those are really good assets, and people are like giving themselves analysis paralysis of analysis.
Exactly. These all
we don't
have
own them. We make
years.
A very modest fee to go put all that together and coordinate it. A very modest fee. Like, it probably isn't worth doing.
Awesome.
But when we throw them out there and we look at the tape and we're like, oh yeah, every one of these assets ought to trade in 10 days, and students don't buy them, we're looking around going, what the heck?
Well, that's how we keep our inventory coming in from third-party offerings, too. So if we're trading them, they're going to keep sending us these assets. And so I know there's a lot of people looking for performing loans. Again, we see emails every day. So, look at this spreadsheet. We're going to have these up for another couple of days. By Friday, we're going to pull them off the member site, and they will be gone. So... you've got a few days to look at them. You know, I think a lot of people, again, are doing, like you say, Eddie, are doing a paralysis analysis. And if you're pulling some of these up by Trulia or Zillow, you know,
you can't go by what Trulio and Zillow provide you always. I was just going back through some of these remaining assets today, just looking at them. There's a lot of these assets we could buy them ourselves. Colonial may end up buying these performing loans ourselves and putting them in one of our portfolios. But again, there's still a good portion of these assets available. Please take a look at them. We'd like to move them this week, but if we haven't moved them by Friday, then our third-party offering's got another investor that's going to look at them. So we still have a few days left, but don't, again, these are strong payers. I mean, they've got 2 years pay history plus. And also, if you're looking at the spreadsheet, we have not updated this spreadsheet, so you'll see the paid-through dates, but keep in mind that paid-through date on this spreadsheet was updated 6/30. When they sent that to us. So these borrowers have made payments. So
listen, that's a typical deal. You bid on the asset subject to evidence it's paying as agreed. Okay, we got no problem with that. That's a subject to bid. That doesn't mean that you bid on the asset and then you turn it down, I don't want to buy it, for something you could have figured out in the first 6 seconds of looking at it when you initially looked at it. That's not a legitimate subject to due diligence bid. So that's what we're sort of saying earlier, is that we've had some people that have made various, you know, tied up an asset, you know, done a letter of intent, I'm going to buy, and they didn't actually buy, and that's we're saying that's kind of what's not cool in the market. So anyway, good topics tonight. We're not kidding about these last assets that we told you about. As the executive team, we're looking at it going, why aren't they buying these assets? Just right, Charles? Am I making that up?
Yeah, no, you're not. And, I mean, these, you know, we thought we'd get strong performers and we would sell out. And surprisingly, we've only sold 13 of 36. So, you know, really kind of a surprise that we haven't moved more of these assets. And again, these may be assets we'll take down in one of our own portfolios, one of our funds. But again, they'll be there to Friday, but come Friday, we're removing all the assets and then we'll make a decision where the assets go.
Okay. All right, real quick, I know we're going to see some of you next week at the special Titanium event, and we're going to have some really fun there. There's some special webinar, special things that are coming out to you to kind of help you prepare for that event, and it will be great. I know Martha's going to be sending out invitations for her Ladies Mastermind event, which is not really part of the mentorship. It's different. But anyway, a lot of you have said you were interested in that, and I know they're going to be sending something out here pretty quick on that. Note Expo, Mr. Matt?
Yes, sir.
Place to be, right?
It is.
So, Note Expo is, there's a still an early bird deal for the mentor students. That's where the hotel's going to be, right there. It's really, really nice facility, super nice. And I don't know if there's going to be a lot of swimming there going on, Matt. But, yeah, it's a very nice hotel. You're going to love it. $249 for mentor students right now, and that enables you to come to the appreciation event as well as Note Expo. And then a guest is $150, and that's limited to one guest. But all of you come last year, you don't need any explanation. But the early bird special is going to end here pretty quick. So if you want the cheaper price, you're going to need to go on and register. So we look forward to seeing you at Note Expo. We'll talk about it as it progresses, but it's going to be the event of the year. And the appreciation event, the mentor student appreciation event, is our most focused on live event that we do for mentor students. So it'll be well worth every mentor student's time to come and plug in with the vendors and interface with who we're going to have there. All right.
So, Mr. Speed, just yes. So everybody knows, Ralph asked this question. He was asking what pool are we talking about as far as the ones that are out there. So under the performing tab, there is If you just click on here, you've got the started on July 28th. There's a performing pool. If you click on that, that'll be the pool that we're talking about. And in the actual due diligence or the files that I put up for the call documents, all of the ones that are still available they're on that list. So if you wanted to cross reference, you're able to do that too. So, but that's the pool that we're talking about. He was asking about that. So I just wanted to make sure in case anybody else had the same question.
Yeah. All right. Very good. All right. Charles, thank you, sir.
No, thank you, Eddie. You all have a great evening.
All right. Thanks, Matt. You guys have a great night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.